Welcome today to our interview series with Outstanding Professionals. I'm Stephen Ibaraki, and I'm conducting an exclusive interview with Bjorn Ehrman and Max Marmer, Silicon Valley thought leaders, entrepreneurs, founders of the Startup Genome Project. Bjorn and Max, your vision significantly impacts entrepreneurship, business, industry, governments, academia, and technology. Thank you for sharing your considerable expertise, deep accumulated insights, and wisdom with our audience.
Thanks. We felt humbled by the impressive response and are happy that we found a very exciting problem to work on.
So for this interview, before you answer, can you just preface your name so that the audience knows who is speaking, and then later on we can sort of do away with that. But initially, anyway, so.
Max. Okay, sure.
Okay, now, starting with Bjorn and then followed by Max, can you profile your history prior to your current role and then three valuable lessons you wish to share from these roles? And then, can you explain your current roles?
Okay, so this is Bjorn speaking. I did a few non and for profits in Germany, in Russia, and in Bangladesh, and before coming to the U.S. about 2.5 years ago. Most of them were in education and HR. My last startup was an education startup that allowed everyone to create their own school online. Still live, you can go on supercoolschool.com. I guess the three key lessons that I learned in the last years working on a few startups is the most important thing is to have the right team, the right people that really complement you and that can help you to make your vision reality. It's also very important to think big. I think that's my biggest learning coming to the U.S., to have the perspective of that you actually can change the world if you do it right. And then the third biggest learning is the ability to let go. I think every entrepreneur has this characteristic of being extremely persistent and trying to push something through. And so sometimes it's very hard to let go of something that you believe in very much, but that just doesn't work. So the ability as an entrepreneur to let go and to change course based on the feedback of your customers is my third biggest learning.
Max speaking, and about a year and a half ago, I got obsessed with the problem, how do we increase the success rate of startups? I was exploring what was the best way to tackle that problem and started with a program called Founders First, which was exploring what happens, what's an effective way to help founders after they get out of seed accelerators like Y Combinator, Techstars, and Seedcamp. And the idea was they just come out from places where they received a lot of support and mentorship and seemed to accelerate very quickly, but there was slow down afterwards. And that seemed like a place where to explore this question. So I started working with about 10 or 15 startups, connecting them to the right mentors and service providers, and did that for about a year before what evolved into what we're doing with Blackbox and the Startup Genome. Prior to that, I was very interested in what education for the 21st century looked like, and how to improve education in a way that was more about just-in-time learning and project-based. And so that ended up segueing into the entrepreneurship interest. And at the start of Blackbox and start of Genome, which is a project of Blackbox company, I left Stanford undergrad and took a leave of absence. The three learnings from this experience. One of the biggest was to start with something that's more bottom-up rather than top-down. I had a very big vision for how to change the education system, but in order to do so, I would have needed to be superintendent. So taking projects that I have the resources to attack right now and doing something scalable that can accumulate momentum, I think is important. Second would be focus, that a lot of things make sense in the long term, but it's very hard to create something out of nothing. And with the limited resources of just being one person or two people doing a startup. And third, I think most important is patience, that things can feel like they are moving slow in the short term, but if you keep putting energy in the right place, things can be moved very quickly in the long term as momentum is accumulated. So I'm very excited that we got to the Startup Genome. genome in just, I guess, a year and a half ago, saying this is what I want to do.
Yeah, that's excellent. You both have this sort of passion, and I can sort of hear this and see it. Now, where do you, each of you see yourselves in the future?
So this is Bjorn speaking. There's a lot of people ask this question. I don't think in the past for my applications in university I would answer this, talking and see myself in politics or see myself leading a large company and changing the world. And I don't care so much anymore about where I see myself in 3, 5, or 10 years. Most important for me is that I have a higher purpose that I can pursue in something where I feel like I can create impact and make the world a better place. And that's really what drives me. There's no roadmap that says in 5 years I will accomplish this. I enjoy, most of all, I enjoy the building process of creating something new and creating value. That's maybe not answering your question, but that's how I feel about this question.
And Max speaking, I think that sort of the mission that has driven me, which I mentioned, is increasing the success rate of startups. Underlying that is the belief that startups are the best lever for change in the world, for economic progress, for job growth. Many studies are recently showing that, and as the pace of innovation is accelerating, startups, the importance of startups increases even more because disruption happens faster and faster, and startups are the best organism or organization designed to deal with uncertainty and fast changing conditions. So where I see us finding the best way to accelerate tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands or maybe millions if that many become entrepreneurs.
Ultimately, I can see then this sort of profound change occurring from both of your missions in life. Now, what is the role of entrepreneurship in our economy?
There's a few key roles, and I guess for most of the people out there, the most important one is jobs and wealth and the ability to go beyond the current living standard. And I think for most entrepreneurs, the role of entrepreneurship is that it's really a way of how to solve society's problem, how to change the world in a scalable way. For some very, very few entrepreneurs, I guess it's money, but really the majority of entrepreneurs are driven by the impact of making a sustainable change in our society or solving a very specific problem.
And from a more philosophical perspective, I would say that sort of the major difference in society between now and 200 years ago is technology. That sort of totally changed the way we live. If you look around the room, you see the impacts of technology everywhere. And entrepreneurship is the process by which technology is integrated into the fabric society. So if you can improve that process and make it faster and more efficient, but right now maybe 90% of startups fail, then we see that as enabling an explosion of wealth on the horizon.
So why is there a global explosion of interest in entrepreneurship?
Yes, there's a few reasons for it, but the major ones are that it's tenfold cheaper to start a company. All the basic infrastructure that is required in order to start a company, from basic software, payment solutions, simple hosting solutions, logistics, everything became super, super cheap, and it's very, very easy to do. At the same time, there's a whole new mindset out there. I think a lot of people think much more global and see themselves as part of a global economy, and also see entrepreneurship as a way to impact this global economy. I think it's very inspiring for a lot of people to start companies in this context and be able to change the world.
And yeah, I think that I second that.
I see. So you sort of very much support what Bjorn was saying, Max. So that's great. You're on the same page.
Yeah.
Now, how can entrepreneurship be a science?
So I don't think it's a pure science. I think it's generally considered more of a management science, in the sense that startups human institution rather than attacking the natural world. So when we talk about it being a science, it's compared similarly to the management science that has and scientific management that is taught in business schools and that started with Frederick Taylor in the late 1800s and early 1900s. And the basic way that we make a major transition from how startups are done now to the future is that the patterns of what works are articulated, discovered, and are discovered, articulated, and empirically tested. And that is what we're trying to do with the Startup Genome, is really zero in on what works and find gather data and test hypotheses. And even the process of entrepreneurship that's being articulated most popularly these days, customer development from Steve Blank and the Lean Startup from Eric Ries, tell startups that everything they think on day one is a set of hypotheses that need to be tested. So already entrepreneurs are becoming more scientific and more like scientists in their approach to building a company.
I guess that's the key in any space is really the mix out of art and science, where art is describing anything that is new and describes new ways of how you execute on something, whereas science describes the learnings from the past and framed in patterns that are repeatable. And I think just like in real art and painting, there's a technique and then there's a unique art on top of this. We have the same thing in entrepreneurship, and the past was really determined by sort of this mythological founder who found a magic solution for something and made it happen. And now, after 30, 40 years of Silicon Valley successes, we start to realize that there's actually real patterns in how entrepreneurship works. And our goal with the Startup Genome was to display some of that and give it on to not just people in the Valley, but also people outside, and empower them to start their own companies more successfully.
Now then, what is the nature of innovation in startups versus large companies?
I guess the key difference is that most large companies are trying to defend their current position and see innovation as a way to keep something alive, where startups, by their nature, try to disrupt something and have a very different mindset about this. And the results are hugely different, where as large companies innovate around something existing, higher certainty markets, existing customers, or existing technology, and they just iterate around this existing technology. Startups come up with very new things, just because they're mostly in a completely blank context, and crazy things can come up in a context where you are not constrained in your ideas and in the direction that you have to go.
And one of the also key distinctions in the way that people talk about the innovation that startups perform versus large companies is that large companies are primarily doing something called sustaining innovation, as defined by Clayton Christensen and the Innovator's Dilemma, and startups are usually doing something more akin to disruptive innovation. And those two different approaches require very different mindsets and have different processes and goals. So in sustaining innovation is more about execution and business plans are useful, whereas startups, things change so quickly with the discovery process that the business plan is outdated almost the moment you write it, because you'll go out and discover some piece is wrong, and eventually almost all of it is wrong. And it's about iterating very quickly. One of the key things we're also working on is that we need a new currency of progress to measure whether disruptive innovation is moving forward. That in large companies, it's measured by financial indicators, and the entire business world is trained to use financial indicators as progress. Whereas startups, the financial indicators lag for a long time. The revenue plan is not an indication of progress. And a better indication is feedback specifically from customers. and seeing how your product or innovation interacts with the environment.
So you talk about the Startup Genome Project, and it's a very interesting report that you've released. Now, can you sort of discuss some of the key findings and then the approach of this project?
There's a number of key findings that maybe Max can go into, but first the general framework that we use that allowed us to have those key findings was that we, just like Max just described, looked at measuring progress based on customer interaction. So what we did is we segmented different kinds of startups based on the complexity of customer interaction, that is based on the amount of decision makers, the acquisition cost, the pricing, the degree of automation in the sales process, etc. And based on this, we can derive the milestones and thresholds companies move through as they evolve on the customer side. And we can truly measure how a company is progressing, and we can predict success and value based on this. There's a and the very key learning of this research is that companies that are highly feedback driven are more successful. So the more you are able to structure and understand the feedback that you get from your customers about your product, and the faster you are able to implement this feedback into the product, the more successful you will be.
So a lot of what we describe in the report are how this typology works, helping startups to identify the different types of startups, which helps them, many have said, helps them assimilate all the information they've gained about how startups work, and also then the stages that these startups move through. So a lot focuses on how these stages work, what they are, and I guess to go into them a little bit, are six stages that startups move through are discovery, validation, efficiency, scale, profit maximization, and then renewal or decline. And then on the typology side, we have four types of startups. The automizer, the social transformer, the integrator, and the challenger. And that the typology is somewhat of an evolution from a previous business segmentation of E2C versus B2B. And we basically found that that wasn't a meaningful segmentation of businesses anymore, primarily because the internet has changed how businesses acquire customers and how they can interact with customers. So the automizer and the challenger correlate most closely with B2B and B2C, automizer being B2C. And the two sort of new types that emerge, the social transformer is similar to the automizer, but is very different in because it has network effects. And network effects are something that doesn't emerge very often in the prior to the internet, and causes the startup to have very different behavior in how it acquires customers, has the challenge of reaching critical mass, and can often have runaway user growth after that. Network effects are where the value increases, the value of the product increases with each additional user. So that's anything that are social networks and marketplaces are two of the best examples online. And then the integrator is also a startup that is a mix between the B2C and B2B, that it acquires customers in a self-service way, but generates leads in a self-service way, but still needs humans to close. So there's sort of a hybrid interaction between humans and sort of more automatic customer acquisition. Some of our other findings were then more about correlations and interesting statistics we could see based on the different types and how different criteria affected how people move through the stages. So we found that founders that learn are more successful, they move through the stages faster, they raise more money, they have better user growth. Startups that that pivot once or twice raise 2.5 times more money and have 3.5 times better user growth. We found that startups that skip stages was a primary reason for failure, that they didn't understand what the tasks that were required at each stage. We found that investors often invest too much capital, or at least more than necessary, from the perspective of maximizing their return in the first two stages, that they could wait a little longer if they understood what startups needed to accomplish at each stage. And we have many more findings in the full report that people can check out.
So have you created a platform or sort of a kind of a physical framework that people can measure against that, you know, you can plug in the information and sort of get some kind of feedback as a result, or are you planning to do that? Or
We currently have a very, very simple benchmark that people can do on the website, startupgenome.cc. We are running a few pilots currently with a few VCs in assessing their portfolio companies where we give them more detailed feedback, and we're also building a product that automizes this process of feedback generation. We're within the next few weeks, entrepreneurs will be able to go on the website and put in their data and get immediate benchmark on their stats and make their milestones and so on. Yeah.
So in this framework that you created, are you planning to keep this kind of more like an open source, you know, where people can freely use it, use this facility, or at some point are you planning to charge? Or
We're not planning to charge entrepreneurs. Our goal is to empower as many entrepreneurs as possible. As the data have network effect, which means that the more data we have, the more precise of a feedback we can create, our goal is to decrease the hurdle as much as possible. And then there's a number of ways of how in the future we could monetize our findings in terms of understanding what are emerging markets and what are emerging business models, etc. It will be very interesting for larger companies in having a more effective sustaining innovation. So we're on the verge of moving towards a more of a software product. Currently, still most of the work is being done manually, and soon the software product will enable us to move a lot faster in releasing more and more data. We have a number of researchers and PhDs that we collaborate with that have access on some of the data. Obviously, all of them are treated very sensitive, so we try not to have people be able to trace back the identity of the companies or the data in our data set. So we're very careful about that. And then in terms of open source, the framework, I guess what we do is that we put out our results as a way to throw our findings into an open discussion where we received a lot of feedback in the last few weeks from other people, and other people are welcome to incorporate our findings into their own work. And we will continue doing this. And as we move forward, we will build more and more of a structured architecture of participation that will allow other people to interact in a more structured way with our data.
What would you say would be then your most surprising finding from doing this research?
One of the most surprising findings that I mentioned previously was a number of ones about investors. So one is that they invest more capital than necessary in the discovery stage, which is to say that they're investing somewhere around $200,000 on average in our data. And accelerators have shown that you can figure out whether a startup can move to the discovery stage with just $25,000 to $50,000. So that is a place where there can be much more efficiency on the investor side, perhaps also improve entrepreneurs' ability to move forward, because too much money can affect their decision making and cause them to spend on things they shouldn't be, and they have more time than they do. Other interesting findings were that the hands-on help that investors provide didn't seem to have any operational impact on the companies. But basically, whether founders said they had helpful investors or not, it didn't make a difference on any of the performance indicators we looked at. Which doesn't mean that we think investors' sort of primary value add is on the supplying capital and is on increasing valuation and finding M&A opportunities. But I guess it it puts some chinks in the armor of the idea of smart money. I would say the other very interesting finding is that the discovery process often takes founders 2 to 3 times longer than many founders expect. That they expect it to often take 3 or 4 months, and can take like 7 to 8, and sometimes even longer. So this ties well with one of the primary causes for failure that we found, which was premature scaling, and basically the initial discovery process taking longer than founders expect causes them to skip these stages that are necessary for sustained and solid growth.
I think another interesting finding, especially for the non-ballet world, where there's different conceptions of what entrepreneurship is that intellectual property turned out to be much less valuable than expected. Where more than 72% of the founders that we have in our data set expected that in the first stages that the IP is a key competitive advantage and part of their product, but after they validated the market, they actually found out that the IP wasn't relevant and they had to reinvent what the IP really is. And that was for me personally a very interesting finding, and I think for a lot of the rest of the world that measures innovation very often with IP done in universities and so on, I think this is also an interesting finding.
I thought it was quite interesting how you were able to sort of determine that, you know, you talk about the automizer, the social transformer, the integrator, and the challenger, but really only one should have a really technically heavy team to ensure success, and that's the automizer. The other one should have some kind of business element into it, right?
So. Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's there's in the Valley, you have a very strong stereotype of companies being purely technical, and as soon as you get out of the Valley, it's almost the other way around, where everyone thinks that business is what counts, and the technical team is the monkeys that take care of the slave work, where that's not true entirely, especially heavy like product companies are, most of them, very few exceptions, were founded by very heavy technical teams. But for a number of companies, like companies that have network effects, or companies that have more of an enterprise angle, a business component is very helpful.
Your initial report, you know, has or discusses, or I should say lists the 6 stages of discovery, validation, efficiency, scale, profit maximization, and renewal, but the last 2 are not covered in the report. Are you planning sort of a part B where you discuss those last 2 stages, the profit maximization and renewal?
We will eventually. At this point, our data set is mostly of companies that are in our first 4 stages, and a lot of the companies that are in stage 5 and 6 already made it. And the key problems for most companies that fail lie in those first 4 stages. That's why we've been focusing on these stages rather than the later stages.
Right, makes absolute sense. Now, in your current roles, what are your top challenges and top opportunities?
I think internally for us, it's a big change for us that when we started, we came together in December, and the idea was to find a scalable way to accelerate startups. And we saw that sort of accelerators like Y Combinator and Techstars were doing a great job of accelerating startups, but weren't very scalable, and that they impacted only a few hundred entrepreneurs a year at best. So we had an idea about how to create that more scalable way, some type of McKinsey for startups, but that required facilitating equity in a way that is very difficult, or more difficult than we thought legally. So one of our key challenges has now been transitioning towards software. A lot of the standardized approach we developed became the Startup Genome, and is a great starting point that has a lot of opportunity as a software product. But now the key challenge is building the team and getting the core DNA of the team right after we made a pivot to a new direction. I would say another key challenge is we are a startup like all the other startups we're analyzing. So we have our own discovery and validation process that we're having to go through. I think we found problem solution fit and are getting through the discovery phase, but the validation phase presents many execution and learning challenges. So I'd say those are the main challenges right now. I think what we're tackling is a huge opportunity, as we've already discussed, in terms of accelerating the pace of innovation. This has the ability to affect both startups and large companies alike. And many governments are also very interested in understanding how to accelerate innovation within their own countries and economies.
Yeah, I guess there's not too much to add of what Max already mentioned. But I guess our key challenge currently is to build the first product. That's what we're focusing on right now. And we'll get back to after this interview. And the big opportunity that we have is that we can build a framework, a tool that will allow people to measure progress in an entirely new way. There's really a big revolution going on that we don't realize yet, but we are in a new age where we can measure every single thing that a customer does with your product on the website, but also starting on many other devices. Your mobile phone returns the same data. Your dishwasher soon will do the same thing. Your hair dryer. There's a whole sensor revolution going on where very soon most products out there will give continuous feedback. And this will allow every company to be really one step ahead of the curve, because they will know how much a customer loves their product or doesn't. And based on this, they can make much faster product and business decisions, something that today is really mostly based on profit and is not very precise, since the pricing can be off, or there can be a number of other factors that create noise around the price feedback. There's no noise around the direct customer feedback if you are able to analyze it and structure it in the right way. And that's really the key challenge that we're working on, in being able to organize and structure all of the customer feedback in a way that you can make better product and business decisions.
You know, when I look at your project, I almost think of it as the startup epigenetic project, because there's so many elements of agility here. Now, the next question is about what specific technology should business and IT executives be embracing today and into the future?
Well, I think what Bjorn just mentioned around gathering customer feedback is essential, and starting to invest in technologies that allow them to gather this data more effectively and analyze it and make sense of it and incorporate it into their decision making. Other places I would look is what are new startups using, who are often earlier adopters on the technology lifecycle adoption curve. So we just looked at what are a number of enabling factors for startups now that will increasingly be integrated into the just larger business and IT department. So some of those are rise in importance of open source software, transitioning from enterprise software to software as a service, cloud hosting, payment processing, global payment processing in lots of different currencies, utilizing the distribution channels of social media that are often very viral, real-time collaboration tools, and targeted advertising. But I think a lot of large companies are already starting to move in this direction, and our focus is also more on the customer side than specifically what are the best tools to use. So here's Bjorn.
I guess one of the key revolutions that new technology is enabling in large companies is much smaller teams, a lot more decentralization, more of a bubble structure than the matrix structure or very like old-fashioned functional hierarchical structures. Most of the things that Max just mentioned empower a much flatter other organizations that can be moving a lot faster. I guess the whole lean startup methodology that came out of the corporate world that has been came now into the startup world and changed a lot is something that big companies can learn from in the way of how you can increase performance significantly by having a very fast iterations and a fast release cycles, 1 or 2 weeks release cycles on the product side instead of having half a year or year release cycles. Obviously, that depends highly on the industry, but I think in general, the ability to move faster and to be more feedback oriented is a key change in the way how companies can operate today because of technology.
It's interesting that your comments sort of tie in with an interview I just conducted yesterday with an expert in Scrum methodology. His name is Stephen Ford, and it's all about agility and having that kind of constant activity occurring and constant iteration. So it's interesting that you know it's aligned with that kind of thinking.
Yeah, Scrum is the most dominant development methodology in the startup world.
Now, Bjorn, in looking at your background, I noticed that you have this great personal passion about unleashing human potential. Why is that?
I think for me personally, I realized this just by connecting the dots of looking back of what I did in the past. I mean, I started in high school with an education simulation company, and then started a non-profit to implement new education methodologies in universities in Germany, and started to then bring a lot of this to Bangladesh and build up and also Business Accelerator in Bangladesh and helping local business move faster. And then afterwards did a company in the HR space trying to help people to display their real abilities and help companies to allocate talent more effectively within their company. And somehow I just was always fascinated by seeing people who unleash their potential. And I'm, but I also, in my private, environment enjoy the most to see people grow, and go beyond, their self. And I think that this manifests in, most of, my companies as well. And, it manifests again in the current setup, Black Box, where the goal is to really empower entrepreneurs and be more powerful and be able to really unleash the passion that they have for very specific problem set by giving them the right tools and the right knowledge that they need in order to become successful.
And then, Max, you're constantly thinking about how to reinvent society's antiquated structures for a 21st century that'd be powered by information technology. Why is this so?
I think this grows out of a question of why are we here and what's our purpose? And sort of if you start to look at things from a, or at least I look at things from a systems perspective, and once you start to look at systems, you start to see systems sitting inside systems within systems. And if I look at myself and individuals, that our goal is sort of to align ourselves with the direction that the way the world is evolving. And if you look at the world, it's really a complex system made up of lots of institutions that have been sort of honed and refined and evolved over hundreds and thousands of years. And that now we're poised for a big change. And basically, how progress is created is by these structures being reinvented based on factors that are now possible that weren't before. And it's sort of timing is a central component in why a structure was invented. Usually, it made sense at the time, but no longer does as things like information technology progress. I would say that is our key new enabling factor that can allow us to reimagine how most of society works. That sort of every industry will eventually be sort of reimagined based on having the power of information technology at the core. So governments can be more distributed and do things that they never could before due to the ease of communication. The business world and education world will also, healthcare, all these industries will change. based on things we can now do with information technology that we couldn't before.
I know that your schedules are pretty heavy, so we're going to get right to the last question, and this is where I'm turning the tables on both of you, and that is, if you were conducting this interview, what questions would you ask, and then what would be your answers?
I like to say that, well, I guess the question is why are we working on this? And I've already said a little bit, but I think that the world's biggest problem is that we don't have enough people working on the world's biggest problems, and that sort of this, what we're doing with the Startup Genome is a way of attacking that. That basically empowering entrepreneurs and giving them, decreasing the barriers to entry and making it more likely for people to succeed, will open up a lot of industries. So I think that is a strong why for why we're working on this. I guess another hot question these days is, are we in another technology bubble? That's a question that we're hearing all around the valley these days. And from our perspective, there'll always be sort of prices that get overinflated. But the question is whether there's any sort of real intrinsic value under what people are looking at. And I think that the companies in this era there's significant economic value, much more than there was in the previous collapse of the dot-com bubble. And if we look at the very fast ascent of billion-dollar companies like LinkedIn, Facebook, Twitter, Zynga, and Groupon, I think this sort of speed is a harbinger of a major structural change that will come very soon. That it's a sign of a lot of the service sector, which has previously dominated the economy, fading, and information technology starting to become the dominant industry much faster than people would expect. We can already see a number of service jobs quickly being eliminated by accountants with things like TurboTax and Amazon eliminating retail jobs and making retail much more efficient, and E-Trade eliminating stockbrokers. So those are some of the things that we're thinking about.
And we can see, connecting to this, that we have a whole new generation of companies coming up that are now not also replacing jobs in areas where you before this had highly skilled people working, and it was highly individual, like doctors, for example. You have a lot of diagnostic applications on your iPhone coming up, or you have companies like Calcium Molecular that allow you to analyze your genes and move from an emergency healthcare towards preventive healthcare. We also have companies like Khan Academy or Creative Commons that show that jobs that before this were done by lawyers and teachers, people who are highly educated, are now starting to be replaced either by very smart technology or by a few very skilled people that outplace all the other ones. And although that sounds really bad for a lot of people, because obviously their jobs will go away, it's really a very good change, because it will allow people to be much more themselves. There will be a lot of creative jobs arising that will allow them to be much more individual and able to bring their much more unique value into the economy, and all the traditional, more routine oriented jobs will be taken over by technology.
Well, it's a fascinating discussion today, and you know, I don't know if you've done a TED conference, but I think your topic and the kind of the passion that you both have in your backgrounds would be perfect for that venue, and ours also, from maybe some support from the MacArthur Foundation in terms of what you're trying to do. I just think it's just amazing work that you're both doing, and very much admire and respect what you're doing going forward. So let's continue to hear from you as you progress.
Yeah. Thank you. And if you're interested, for the listeners, you can read more on startupgenome.cc. And if you have any questions or if you have feedback, which is always very valuable for us, send us an email to startupgenome@blackbox.vc.
Well, this is excellent. And again, Bjorn and Max, thank you for coming in today. Again, your schedules are very demanding, so it's been really fortunate for our audience to hear all of your thoughts on this marvelous project that you're that's underway right now. And really, we appreciate you sharing your wisdom with our audience.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm Stephen Abraki, and this concludes our exclusive interview with Bjorn Herman and Max Marmer, Silicon Valley thought leaders, entrepreneurs, founders of the Startup Genome Project.